Welcome to the Women's Health Podcast. I'm Anthony Lowe, the physio detective.
And I'm Marika Hart, a pelvic health and musculoskeletal physio. Together we interview leading authorities, we answer questions and share our thoughts to provide the general public with the best quality information that we can find on all aspects of women's health. Please remember that the materials and the content on this podcast are intended as general information only and are for entertainment purposes.
They're not intended to be a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Now, sit back, grab your favorite beverage, or do your own thing, and enjoy the show. Welcome back to the Women's Health Podcast. I'm one of your hosts, Anthony Lowe, and joining me is Marika Hart. It's been 2 years since we last did a podcast, episode 54, and you know what? Lots of things have been going on. What's been going on with you, Marika?
I cannot believe it's been 2 years. It's it feels like we were kind of in the depths of COVID when we were last doing this podcast. We kind of went a bit crazy for a year and smashed out a lot of podcasts. And then, I don't know, life took a hold. I got very, very busy finishing off my master's, which I am done. Hallelujah. So graduated end of last year and raising two teenagers and just generally being stupidly busy. And just needed to have that time, I think, just to kind of recuperate and get things done. How about you?
Yeah. Oh, before we get on to me, how did you finish in your master's?
Are you throwing me on the spot here, Anthony? I did well, yes.
You did well?
Yes.
It wasn't just well, was it?
Yeah, I did very well.
Okay. You can ask Marika privately, but she kind of killed it. She did very, very well.
Yes, I did very well in my master's. It was great. It was a long journey. I think, so I studied the Master's of Continence and Pelvic Health Physio at Curtin, which is in Western Australia. I started it probably, I think it took me about 4.5 years in the end, with a year off in the middle of COVID. It was just all the clinics were shut down because the hospitals weren't really taking many people. And I didn't really want to do it on telehealth. So I did take a year off in the middle. I absolutely loved it. I am so glad that I did it. I think from where I started to where I am at now is hard to even compare. But as always, you know, like a postgraduate course is one part of your journey. But I'm extremely grateful that I did it, not just for the learning and I can do a lot of courses, but I just forget stuff really easily. And I think having that accountability, doing exams, doing like the case studies and things, are actually getting that clinical reasoning process drilled a lot is, I found, really helpful doing clinics. But also the people that I met along the way, like our good friend Edwina, who's one of my besties, who's Jen Vardy, and like just other people who I met through the masters who will be lifelong friends. And we're all still continuing to learn and share our experiences and help each other out. And I've, you know, grown a lot from it, but it's been, it was great.
Yeah, it's such a good thing to do. And, there's always that question about short courses or doing a master's, and there's advantages for both. And ultimately, it's time, right? Like when we did masterclass, it was hours every week for 3 months, because it takes time to think about things and discuss things and change things. And whether it's a master's or a short course or a series, like time under load makes a difference. So it sounds like a great experience, and yes, well done to your achievements out there.
Thank you.
Marika's very modest, but think about some of the highest honors that you can have, and that's what Marika got. So well done. Since July 2021, let's see, mm-hmm. I was working, Well, 2021, July 2021, Sydney was in lockdown, and we didn't really come out of it until October of 2021. And yeah, then back to the work and back to clinics. And I did some online courses of the TFA. And in 2022, the female athlete level one, the female athlete level one. And yeah, and then I did Diastasis Done Differently and Bulletproof Your Body. So where we met, Marika, was actually on a Bulletproof Your Body pelvic floor and core course. It was back in Perth.
8 years ago?
Was it 2014 or 15? I feel like it was around that time.
Yeah, so, a long time ago.
It was a while ago. It was good, though. It was good fun. I remember you lifting. And it was awesome. It was really good. And I think I wasn't sure if that was the first time, I think, that you did heavy deadlifts, right?
Yeah. You made me do like 60 kilos or something.
Mm-hmm. I didn't make you.
You didn't make me do anything. You can't make me do anything.
I suggested that it was possible, right? It's like, yeah, you could do that. I think we were in CrossFit Furnace up north a little bit, but yeah. So
you challenged my body.
It was good fun. So I taught that course again up in Ballina, and I did a 1 day Diastasis Done Differently as well up there, and that was in around this time last year, 2022, and then October and November 2022, I started teaching again overseas. So I went to America and taught in Salt Lake City, Atlanta, and Columbus, Ohio was really nice. Like, it's one of the first inland places that I thought I could really live here. Like, Clintonville was really, really nice. So yeah.
Didn't you go to Canada on that trip as well?
Well, after that, I went to New Zealand to do the sports camp that I do. And then January was Dublin, Cork, Glasgow, transited through London to Exeter, came home, San Diego for combined sections meeting where I was presenting with Teresa Wasser and Terry Robertson. And then I came home. And then I went to New Zealand about 3 or 4 weeks later. I went to New Zealand to teach. That was really fun in Auckland. Came home, and then I went to Canada for 4 weeks. So, yeah, that was full on. Yeah, it's full on. So I was in Saskatoon, Guelph, Cambridge, which are around the Toronto area. Drove to Montreal, taught in Montreal, hung out with Nicola Robertson in Stirling and Belleville, and then out of Toronto to Kelowna, where I presented at the Canadian, the BC Physio Association at their conference. I gave a keynote speech there and taught the female athlete there. Pardon?
You don't ski. You're in
BC. It was also
BC.
Summer.
No,
that one was April, May.
Oh, right. Sorry. Okay. I thought you were there in January. I was like, what a waste, man. What a waste.
I don't ski. I have skied, and I reckon I could ski. However, physics dictates that if I touch somebody while skiing, they will, they will get hurt. So I just have to be careful if I'm skiing. That was Canada. Came home. A couple of weeks later, I was in, a few weeks later was Switzerland and Germany. And then came home. And then that weekend that I came home, I taught a one-day custom course for my Pilates group on the Gold Coast for their annual continuing ed event that they host for their instructors. So that was really cool. And yeah, that was a couple of weekends ago. So
you got your frequent fly points back up again by the sounds of things.
Yeah, I made platinum again. It was very frustrating losing it over COVID. But yeah, it's back. And then in 4 weeks, I go to the games in America, as well as teaching CrossFit in Florida, games? Jacksonville, the CrossFit Games, yeah, in Madison. And then I come home and then I go over again.
Go and say hi to Anthony.
That's it. Come say hi to me at the CrossFit Games. Always happy to help. Say hello, catch up, eat, drink, exercise. And then, yeah, I come back and then I go again to America for Pelvicon in Atlanta. And
can you explain to me what Pelvicon is? Because I've never heard of that.
Yeah, so a group of physios, Jessica Rial is one of them. It's just a pelvic health conference, like Pelvicon. And they got speakers in last year. I wasn't there. And then this year, I think it's bigger. It sold out last year. It sold out this year. So, yeah, go hang out with a bunch of public health physios. I'm going to say yes, although I suspect that non-physios will also get stuff out of it. But I suspect, Taryn, I think, is speaking at it, for example. Taryn Hallam. Yeah. So I suspect it's physio-based. I didn't actually look. Just a bunch of friends are going, a bunch of TAs are going, so I'll go hang out with them. And it'll be good to catch up, and then I might have a holiday or an event out there, like a course, see whatever happens. Yeah.
Is anyone else jealous of Anthony's travels?
I don't know. If you want me to visit your neck of the woods, organize a course for me, I'll come visit. I don't mind. I quite enjoy it. But yeah, that's what's been going on, and that's what's happening in the future. The youngest is doing his final exams. So, yep, that's cool. And the other two are at uni still. Yeah. Wife's just plugging away, going along. Got some projects that I want to finish and some new things that I want to start. So, yeah, we'll see how things go.
And we started to chat a bit, I guess, earlier in the year about trying to get the podcast up and running again. Because every time we did it, we'd always be like, oh, that person's so good and it was so interesting. And we would, I always found it such a good learning opportunity. I love being the idiot in the room, and I know you do as well, and just being able to, you know, talk to people who are, you know, really good at stuff and know lots of cool stuff. And so we've just been brainstorming a few thoughts, a few ideas on people we would like to speak to or topics that we would like to cover. And we'd love to hear from other people if there's sort of particular things that they'd be interested in. I know I said to you, Anthony, recently, I've fallen down a bit of a rabbit hole with hypermobility. It's one of those things that, yes, I was, of course, aware of hypermobility and Ellis Danlos and these sorts of things, but I get a lot of referrals from the pelvic pain clinic where I work. And now that I'm screening a lot more for it, I'm just finding the prevalence within that population so high, and I'm doing courses to learn more about how to help support people with hypermobility spectrum disorder and EDS. And so I would love to get a couple of experts to come and talk to us about the diagnostic sort of criteria and some of the common difficulties that people struggle with, but also, you know, how can we help these people, you know, because these are things that aren't cured, you know, there are things that, you know, there are accommodations that need to be made, but certainly things that we can do as health and fitness professionals to help improve quality of life and resilience and reduce pain and, yeah, all that kind of stuff, which I'm super interested in learning more about. So we're going to push for a bit of that. What are you looking forward to?
Look, honestly, I'm happy to hear from lots of different people. The EDS thing, the hypermobility thing, is super interesting to me. you know, in a world where so much of the information is just averaged out for people, you know, my limited experience, just, you know, the people that I see with these conditions, they don't track their progress. Like, you can't track their progress in the average way. Like, it just doesn't look the same. And so, you know, understanding that, you know, that's going to be really cool, and what changes there've been in the research, if there's been any. I know the classification's changed a few times. So, you know, it's always hard to keep up with the names. Every time somebody comes in and it's like, oh, okay, I go type up and have a look to see what it's called these days, because it seems to change a bit. So that's going to be cool. Would love to hear, you know, just different perspectives on all the different pelvic health things. You know, things like the common ones, pelvic organ prolapse, stress incontinence, urge incontinence, you know, pelvic pain, but just different perspectives and different management strategies, different experiences and stories too, right? So I quite enjoy it when we hear from people who have their story to share. So if any of you know good guests to get on, or if you want us to ask one of our previous guests to come back for a bit of an update, you know, we were talking about Sally with the endometriosis as one for sure. You know, we definitely want to get back if we can. So all of these things would be awesome. I love learning, like you, lifelong learner, happy to just learn from whoever I'm listening to. It's going to be fun. I miss it.
And it's interesting because I think we didn't really talk a lot about overactive bladder. I know we talked about bladder pain syndrome with Jilly Bond, who, for those of you who don't know Jilly, or didn't hear that podcast, or those two podcasts, go back and have a listen because she's just amazing. So we talked about bladder pain syndrome with her and definitely that sort of biopsychosocial approach to management. But a lot of what I do these days, so I work as a urogyne physio at a public hospital. So I work alongside the surgeons, like the doctors in clinic, one day a week, and then the rest of the time is in outpatients. And it's been like a big learning curve for me, learning about, you know, the medical and conservative management of overactive bladder and just how different people present. And really, I find it it's so interesting because the presentations are so different. So when people say to me, oh, how do you treat this? It's like, well, no two people are the same, right? As we pelvic pain, you know, it's not a recipe. And there's a lot of problem solving, you know, and pelvic floor muscles often have very little to do with urgency, you know, like if anything, they tend to be a bit more upregulated. But they're, you know, doing a shit ton of pelvic floor exercises to prevent the leaking or the urgency can often make them worse. So so it's like, really putting the detective hat on and figuring out all the different factors that can influence that patient presentation, which makes it so interesting, but also that real multidisciplinary approach. So working with the psychologists, the urogynecologists, the urologists, the nurses, dietetics, whoever, as part of that thing, which I just find super interesting. It's been, I'm very much on a massive learning curve. I've still got a long way to go, but I'm excited by work. I think it's just, always learning. I love about it.
Absolutely. It sounds exciting, to be honest. And the referral bias too, you know, like you're probably seeing some of the harder ones that aren't doing as well out in the community, or just the really complex cases and, you know, that referral bias, but with your background from sports and musculoskeletal and being a pelvic health physio in the community and then going to such a specialized thing, like, oh, you're in such a great position. It's awesome. I'm so happy for you. And I'm so happy for all the people that get to interact with you and benefit from everything that you can bring. You've got such a broad base of experience, you know, to bring, and that inquisitive mind, which it's always fun to watch and to talk with you about such things.
I think I know we've talked about this a lot, but you know, that Musk experience, I'm so every day grateful for having 10 years in Musk. And I'm not saying everyone needs to have 10 years in Musk and a postgraduate Musk degree. I mean, I'm certainly not suggesting that, but like at least a couple of years working with, you know, in a musculoskeletal clinic is so helpful. Being able to do a decent neuro exam and a, you know, musculoskeletal exam, being able to treat back pain, because, you know, we know that there's a lot of urgency and back pain that are linked. And if people being able to sort of treat multiple things at once, I think is really important, or at least acknowledge the contribution of those different things and how they can interact. But yeah, it's, I think having that, and I know Carolyn Van Dyken would totally agree that having that, you know, pelvic health is just, what does she say? It's just musculoskeletal in a cave or something.
Yeah, something like that. Something that I, as a dude, usually don't say, because it's just, it's bad coming from a male. So.
Yeah, it's handy. It's handy.
Yeah, yeah. And, you know, I literally, not that long ago, got off a podcast as a guest this time. And, you know, principles, not protocols. So like what we've been talking about, having to investigate and work by the principles and not just, okay, you have this, so we're going to do that. But also, you know, using those same principles that we use in musculoskeletal, orthopedic physio, sports physio, to helping people with pelvic floor conditions, because there's so much overlap. And one of the points that I made on that podcast was, you know, the question was, okay, what are some of the indications when you're working with somebody with prolapse or incontinence? What are some of the indications that might lead you to ask broader questions, where red S, you know, relative energy deficiency in sport, might be relevant, like asking about their period and their energy levels and all the rest of it. And, you know, I was confused at first because I'm like, I don't know, like I don't ever think of certain things that come up in an assessment that trigger me to ask these things. It's more the other way around. Why aren't we starting broad? I think that's the default. We start holistic and then we get specific with certain areas as the investigation goes along. So, you know, just still always working to the broad to narrow is and staying as broad as possible or as long as possible with all the uncertainty. It's not easy work. It's hard work, but certainly worth it. Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, I think awesome. I always think about your red slide and that really simple approach, which just makes so much sense, and bringing it down to that level of, okay, clear the red flags. You know, what can they do right now? What do they want to be able to do? You know, that sort of stuff is keeping it so simple, but it's so effective.
It's as simple as I can make it. And you know, it's, I'm trying to get it even simpler, but I don't know, maybe I'm just too close to it. But I did add a little tagline to it, Marika. It's finding the difference with an S, stroke S, finding the difference that make a difference. That's a summary of the slide. Do something different. Finding the difference that make a difference. That's ultimately all we're doing. So the first part is we find out how they do things, what their preferences are. And the second part is we help them explore and discover what the different things that they could do are, and we try to find the ones that make a difference in a good way.
So, and I think that's probably, you know, one of the biggest things I came away with from your courses was that experiential learning. That and I think that's that capacity to be open-minded and to play a bit, which so play, explore with movement, explore with palpation or cueing or different things, so that that person in that moment can have an experience in which maybe they feel stronger, or they feel less pain, or they feel less heaviness, or they leak less, or something that is different, which is what you're talking about, that can then inspire the next stage of the rehabilitation process, is where I see it. And I think I was literally just working with some undergraduates today, doing some tutoring, and we were talking about how even within that assessment process, like, yes, we would be looking at, you know, range of motion, for example, with someone with back pain, or, you know, how they stand, how they move. But just that, for instance, doing that vertical compression, what does that mean? If you change something, you do the same thing. Does it feel different? What does that mean to that person, et cetera, et cetera? But I think those experiments, those little changes are so valuable, because, you know, we learn so much through experiencing something and feeling something different, rather than being told, go and do these exercises, go and do these stretches, because they'll make you feel better.
Absolutely. And the funny thing is, right, is that personal experience is probably the biggest change agent that there is out there. Like, if you experience powerful effects, results, change, no matter what, that's the lowest form of evidence, but it's the biggest motivator for change. You know, and it's quite funny, because we prefer the highest levels of evidence for good reason. For good reason, because we're so biased. There was somebody recently this year on a course. They said to me, I get what you're saying, Anthony. You know, things work just not for the reasons why we think they do. I say it a lot on the courses. and she goes, I get it. I really do. I understand that. But I was one of those people that had, like, I've tried everything, and I saw somebody who was a bit alternative, and I started getting better. And I know what you're saying, that it's probably not for the reasons that they think. But inside, deep inside, it's hard for me to let that reason go, because I had such a powerful change. And just reminding people that it's okay to experience the results. In fact, I care more about the end result than I do about the theoretical reasons why it worked, right? Like, in the end, we just want people to achieve their goals. The reasons why they're working, we get to debate politely and professionally, hopefully. but yeah, you know, like, I thought that was a great illustration of the lowest form of evidence having so much weight against higher forms of evidence, higher levels of evidence. And we need to be able to manage both. I think that we should study the highest forms of evidence and utilize the lowest form of evidence to help people change. And that feels like it's almost hypocritical. It feels almost hypocritical, but yeah, anyway, it's a philosophical.
Really interesting. It's really interesting though to test your own biases, because we have, I mean, like, you know, within our profession, we've moved very much away from EPA. So electrophysical agents, ultrasound, et cetera, right?
STEM.
So So, you know, a therapeutic ultrasound, before I started my recent job, I hadn't used in probably 15 plus years. Maybe I ultrasound an ankle 10 years ago, you know, like an acute ankle sprain. And I did it because the patient asked me to, you know, like, I'm not big on EPA. However, it can work really well in breast conditions. Like,
oh, yeah.
For mastitis.
Mastitis.
And laser can work really well for cracked nipples and for perineal pain. And from the breast conditions, you see they ultrasound and they go pump and the flow increases pretty rapidly. Again, why? Couldn't tell you. I don't even try and lie to my patients and make up stories. But the other one that I've found, which has really challenged my bias, is acupuncture. Mm. So for the overactive bladder patients, and we use, you know, sterile needles along the pathway of the tibial nerve, and I usually do it once a week for 4 weeks. And we're talking these real sort of stubborn OAB. They've done everything else. Sometimes they've even had Botox. They've had they've been on anticholinergics. They've done TENS. They've done bladder calming, bladder diuresis, fluid. You know, they've done it all. And then I kind of think, well, do you want to give it a go? And they come back, and their urgency and their frequency is significantly improved. And I just, in my head, I'm like, what the hell? I still find it hard to understand why. And yes, there's theories that, you know, tibial nerve coming up, S1 to S3, where the bladder comes in, yada, yada, yada. Like, we can hypothesize as to why.
We can make stories, and, yeah.
Yeah, and actually for PTNS, they've done, like, urodynamics.
Posterior tibial nerve, right?
Yeah. Oh, sorry, percutaneous.
Percutaneous so tibial nerve, the needle yeah. In,
and then they stim through stim the nerves, yeah.
Yeah.
And they've done urodynamic studies before and after and shown bladder capacity improving, detrusor overactivity improving. So not just like a sensory change, as in the person feels different or behaves differently, but actually the bladder starts behaving differently. So you kind of, I'm still just like, huh. My bias says, oh, it's all bullshit. And then.
Yeah. Well, what about working on the thoracic spine and getting GI changes? You know, that's weird. That's still weird to me. I can draw you the lines as to why I think it works. But yeah, you know, so many contributions, and those rib heads sit right next to, like, there will be, and you know, I'm not a big fascia guy, but there is a tight connection right there, as well as rami communicants, between the sympathetic trunk and you know, the exiting nerve roots there. Oh wow, I've seen too many crazy nerves, things. Baby. I know, and people have said to me, "Are you a chiro?" That's very chiro, and it's like, it's not a profession, right? It's biology. It's let's be open to what the biology is trying to say. We don't have to believe the stories about why, you know, like chiropractors will tell you, okay, traditionally we thought that the bones were sitting out of place causing this. We know from the research that that's not true. However, we still get these results. So, you know, yep. There's very scientific evidence-based chiropractors out there doing good things. So, yep. You know, it's exciting. I think physio is well-placed as a profession to move forward in all the different areas that we are interested in, you know, musculoskeletal ortho, sports, pelvic health. You know, we have a good scientific grounding, and we're well positioned to help. And I think we should be supporting each other to continue to work together and really make sure that people have access to the great health benefits that come from seeing you know, physios, health and fitness professionals. I would love to see more fitness professional led pelvic floor exercise classes. I don't think pelvic health physios need to be running them. I think they need to be teaching people how to do the contractions, teach the fitness professionals how to run the classes, but nobody is doing an internal in the middle of a class. So, like, do you know what I mean? And so, let's get the fitness professionals out there. It will be cheaper on average. That will increase the ability for more people to access it. And, you know, the pelvic health physios with their unique skills can see more of the people that need that, that assessment. So, yeah, if you're a fitness professional listening.
A lot before about accessibility. Pardon? Yeah. Accessibility, especially in some countries, is really challenging. And obviously working with Girls Gone Strong, you know, we would have people in the chat group saying, oh, I'm looking for a pelvic health physio near this town, and the nearest one I know of is 8 hours away, you know, or something like that.
Yep.
So
it's terrible.
And that's just, it's not uncommon. And I think things have evolved a lot in the last few years. We've got a lot more people doing telehealth, which actually we do a lot of at work. And obviously for things that need an internal examination, we need to be doing things in person, and we certainly don't ever do anything on a camera that is intimate. But a lot of, you know, of what we do is education, and offering advice based on, you know, subjective findings and things like that. So there's a lot that can be done. But you're talking about the fitness professionals, and that's why I do a lot of work with Girls Gone Strong, and why you teach a lot with fitness in, you know, gyms and in places where it's comfortable and safe for other people to come in and not feel like, oh, it's just physios and I'm going to be out of place or whatever. But, you know, that I completely agree. And I think fitness professionals are really well placed to run group classes and support the vast majority of patients. So people with mild symptomatic prolapse, bit of stress incontinence, all those things, you know, that exercise is so valuable. It's so important. Mental, physical health, well-being, socialization, all that kind of stuff. I know you and I could talk about that for hours, but, you know, I would do anything as a physio to get my clients into spaces where they feel that they can exercise in a safe way. And we don't have pelvic floor safe exercises and pelvic floor unsafe, or prolapse safe and prolapse unsafe. That just, you know, doesn't exist. It just doesn't work that way. But they're having fitness professionals understand the principles and have a really good relationship with the clients, and they can help adjust and adapt and load. Like, we want them to load. We want some adaptation, and how fast or slow that is, you know, that's variable, but we want that moving forward.
Absolutely. And, you know, like you said, the fitness professionals see them so much more than we do. And that ability to be a part of their lives and hear so much more about not just whatever exercise goal they're seeing them for is so valuable. And it's underrated, far too underrated. And anyway, I just really feel I really feel like we should just work more together. People like their kingdoms. Do you know what I mean? People like their kingdoms. People like their silos. And we need to just really get out there and just work together with like-minded people. That's ultimately what it is. And I do. I'm a physio. I love physio. I want the best for physio because I'm biased. I'm a physio. And I think the way forward is to lead. I think it's to lead. I think it's to empower others, other health and fitness professionals, to educate and to really take that leadership forwards, not in an arrogant way, but in a way that can demonstrate and people can have an experience of what collaborative learning and working with other people feels like, because ultimately that's going to end up with the best result for people. So, yeah. Or at least I believe that.
It's been interesting for me working with a lot of undergraduates in the last few years, as you know, doing the tutoring. And I feel like there is still this idea that in physiotherapy, in Australia in particular, we have these, because I ask them, oh, do you have any idea what you want to do at the end of your final year? And there's still this public, like, I'm going to work in a public hospital and do this, or I'm going to go into private practice. So it's this really sort of binary thing. And I do feel like there is still this idea that you have a pathway and that physio looks a certain way. And I hope that people, so new physios who are getting out there, go and talk to lots of different people. You know, you and I have done lots of random shit over our careers. You know, you can see, you know, you've gone off, created your own business, traveled the world, run workshops. You've done that for years, as well as your private practice and your sports medicine sort of stuff. And I've worked in, you know, public and in private and in sports medicine and in mask, and ran my own business teaching pre and postnatal exercise classes for like 5 years, you know, work with Girls Gone Strong and help develop all their program. Like, we've just, this is the thing I love about our job, is that you're only really limited by your imagination and your scope of practice, right? Like, what you've been trained to do and what you legally can do, but it doesn't have to look like I work in a hospital or I work in a, you know, down the road at the local physio clinic. There is so much scope to be doing other stuff, you know? So I think we can just afford to be a little bit more, a bit more creative in where we go and who we work with and how, like you were talking. So the reason I was going down this route is just thinking about how you were talking about working with, you know, with fitness professionals, working with other professionals, having more of a collaborative approach. I think it's just the way forward and it could be done a lot better.
Absolutely. Lots and lots of topics out there we would love to discuss. Tell us what you think. Tell, you know, Marika and I, we can chat about anything really. So tell us what you're thinking about and what's really been on your mind. Leave us a comment below and let us know if there's any particular topics or guests that you would love to hear from or you would love to hear again, and we can always ask them, because there's so many great people out there doing great things. There's so many people doing good work. Would love to get lots of different people on there, lots of different topics as well. Let us know what you want to hear about. And we'll do our best to get them out there for you. And yeah, is there anything else that you wanted to cover today, Marika?
Not really. I think we were having a bit of a random chat. I sometimes forget that we're recording and I feel like I'm just talking to you. And then I think, oh God, people are going to listen to this now. But that's all right. That's just how we roll. No, that sounds great. I'd love to hear what people want to hear about. And we'll just get some really clever people in and have a good chat.
I think that sounds wonderful. And so, yes, thank you for listening to us. We look forward to hearing from you. We will be back about once a month, maybe a little bit more, maybe a little bit less. It really depends on our schedules and what's going on. But yeah, it's been a fun 2 years. I've missed the podcast. I've missed interacting with people in person. So, you know, we're back again, and let's keep this rolling. Please share and let people know that we're back again, and we look forward to hearing from you. Thanks very much.
Bye.
Well, that's it for this episode. Be sure to hit like if you enjoyed the episode and leave any comments or questions below. We'd really like to hear from you.
If you haven't already hit subscribe, please do so now so that you can be kept notified when we release our next episode.
Otherwise, thank you for listening, and we look forward to having you back with us for another episode of the Women's Health Podcast.